Today I'm going to be presenting some research that I've been working on over the past year, looking at two different wildfires that have burned in southern Idaho, and specifically looking at wind erosion that has occurred following these wildfires. In the western U.S., post-wildfire wind erosion has become an increasingly big issue in recent decades, and we expect it to continue to be a big issue as a function of climate change, because we've seen a lengthening of the annual wildfire season and an increase in wildfire frequency in recent decades. This is especially true in semi-arid rangelands, like we have in southern Idaho, in the Snake River Plain, for example, and southeastern portion of Idaho. There are highly erodible loess soils that, when covered by vegetation, are relatively stable surfaces. But when that vegetation is removed, either for agricultural production, shown here in the NRCS erosion map, or by wildfires, the soils and the landscapes are less susceptible to erosion and transport by wind. And so we've seen dust storms that will pick up off of these summer wildfire locations, and they'll blow across highways and blow into the neighboring towns. And it's become an issue both from a human health and safety standpoint, as well as being of interest to soil scientists, and geomorphologists, ecologists, pollution scientists. For the research that I've been working on for this past year, we're really looking at pretty fundamental questions in terms of our research objectives and questions. We're interested in whether there's more erosion that appears to be occurring at these burn sites compared to unburned sites. We're interested in what type of variability or how much variability there is in erosion potential between burned areas or within an individual burned area. And then we're also interested in what types, if there are soil and vegetation and microclimate characteristics that control the erosion potential at these sites. Much of the methods that I've been using really focus on quantifying saltation at these sites. I use saltation sensors to calculate saltation activity, which is just a fraction of a 5-minute period during which saltating particle impacts are counted or detected by the sensor. And then I'm using that measurement and calculation of saltation activity along with anemometer measurements to calculate threshold wind speeds, which is the minimum wind speed required to initiate saltation. And then I'm also using BSNE sediment flux towers with the BSNE samplers set up at 5, 10, 20, 55, and 100 centimeters out at these sites. So there's two study areas or two wildfires that I've been working at over this past year. There was the Crystal Fire that burned in southeastern Idaho. It burned over 200,000 acres of BLM rangelands at the beginning of September of 2006. And so I instrumented that site throughout the fall and the early part of the winter of 2006, and then had to bring my equipment back in and then set it back up again at the end of spring and through the summer of 2007. And then this fire burned out at the Idaho National Laboratory just recently, about 2 months ago in 2007, and that burned about 15,000 acres, and I started working at that site just recently. So we have enough equipment for three study plots set up like this at each fire, with a saltation sensor, anemometers, and other micromet equipment set up at the center of the plot, and then a BSNE sediment flux tower set up as well. And then we have two more sediment flux towers set up sort of laterally upwind about 20 meters from the center of the plot as well. And then I've done vegetation and ground cover transects within this study plot that are radial out from the center of the plot to get an idea about vegetation height, cover, and exposed bare soil. So first I'm going to present some results from this fire that I worked at in 2006, the Crystal Fire. I'm going to go through just a few pictures to give you an idea for what these landscapes look like after they've burned. So this is the first burn site I worked at the Crystal Fire. On the left you see my anemometers, micromet equipment, and then saltation sensors kind of in the background up there. And then we see the BSNE, one of the BSNE towers set up there. And you see that there's a fair amount of burn standing shrub vegetation, at least at these sites, but there's a fair amount of exposed soil, obviously, as well. Here's the second burn site, and again, here in this one, you see the saltation sensor set up here in the foreground, the BSNE tower back here. And you see that the fire's burned somewhat patchily as well, and there is some unburned standing shrub vegetation as well, still remaining at some of these sites. And then here's the unburned site I worked at this Crystal Fire. I'll just show you here in the inset photo, this is the BSNE tower, which is about a meter tall, and so that gives you an idea for about how tall the sagebrush is out there at this unburned site. So these are the vegetation and ground cover characteristics at the two burn sites and the unburned site for the fall immediately following the burn. And the things I'd point out is obviously there's a lot of exposed bare soil at the two burn sites, and then comparatively more shrub and herbaceous cover at the unburnt site, as well as the average height and the variability in shrub height is substantially greater at the unburnt site. So then we might expect that if we measured wind speeds with anemometers set up at the top of that, roughly the top of that shrub vegetation canopy, which is about 110 centimeters, that winds would be attenuated at that height at the unburned site compared to the burn site. So here we have mean wind speed on the y-axis, and then time going from September 21st, immediately following the burn, through the middle of January, and there are some gaps here when my equipment was not up and running at either one of the sites or both of the sites. But we see that on mean wind speeds calculated at 5-minute intervals over this time period, we're roughly 2 or 3 meters per second lower at this top of the vegetation canopy height at the unburned site compared to the burned site. So then over the same time period, we can look at saltation activity, where saltation activity goes from 0 to 1 on the y-axis, with 0 meaning that over a 5-minute period, no particle impacts were detected or counted by the sensor, 1 meaning that all 300 seconds of that 5-minute period saltation was detected by the sensor. And the thing that obviously jumps out is that there is substantially, saltation activity was substantially greater and more frequently detected at the burn site compared to the unburned site. And we also see that these saltation events were fairly episodic in nature as well at the burn site, with sometimes a week or even 2 weeks of an interval in between individual erosion events throughout this fall and early winter study period, portion of the study period. So then, as I said, I had to bring all my equipment in the middle of January as it got more difficult to get out to my start sites and got colder and started to snow a little bit. So I brought the equipment in, and then I reinstalled it again at the beginning of May or the end of April, and I repeated my vegetation transects just to get an idea about what kind of vegetation had regrown with the green up in the spring. And so here I just circled the fall and spring, herbaceous and bare ground cover, and we see that herbaceous vegetation has increased, which corresponds with a decrease in bare ground with that spring green up. And then similarly at the unburned site, there was some increase in herbaceous vegetation cover as well with that green up. But in general, the sites have become more similar in terms of how much exposed bare soil is present. And so here is saltation activity over that summer portion of the end of spring, summer portion of the study period after that spring green up. And we see that there was really very little erosion, very little saltation detected by the sensors during this entire period, suggesting that there's not very much erosion occurring after that spring green up of vegetation. I also, as I said, calculated sediment flux with using these sediment flux towers. And this is for the fall portion of the study period at the unburned burn and the two burn sites. So we have sediment flux in kilograms of sediment passing a meter square plane over a 30-day period on average for the fall. And then we have the sediment flux heights here on the x-axis, 5, 10, 20, 55, and 100 centimeters, where blue is the unburned site, yellow is burn 2, red is burn 1. And we obviously see that there wasn't ever a collectible amount of sediment in the samplers at the unburned site. And there was a fair amount of sediment passing, being transported through the two burn sites. And if you integrate these curves to calculate a sediment discharge or a value in kilograms of sediment passing a 1 meter height profile from the ground up to a meter height over that 30-day period, it comes out to be a little over 5 kilograms of sediment at both of the burn sites. And that value appeared to sort of steadily decrease through the spring, going from October to November, or the fall, sorry, going from October to November to December at those two burn sites. So next I'm going to present a few results from this work that I've been doing just recently at this INL fire that burned about 2 months ago at the Idaho National Laboratory. Here's saltation activity presented over a period of time of about a month from August 27th to September 21st. And this fire, or my sites, are set up similarly with one unburned site and two burn sites. The unburned site's in blue, and we see there's very little saltation being detected out there at that unburned site. And then we also see that almost every single day during this month, there was saltation detected at least one of the sites. And often saltation was detected at both sites, but then there are obviously days and saltation was only detected at one of the two burn sites. So then we can look at threshold wind speeds here over a two-week period from September 7th to September 19th at the two burn sites. And we see that threshold wind speeds, here threshold is on the y-axis in meters per second, we see that they held relatively steady at about 9 meters, maybe a little less than 9 meters per second over this two-week period at the two burn sites, although it appears that maybe threshold was slightly higher at the second burn site in yellow compared to the first burn site in red. We can zoom in on one of these individual days, this is September 7th, and look at threshold wind speeds for the wind events throughout the day, where we have max wind speeds measured at 2 meters in the kind of the squiggly gray line here, and then the black dots are the threshold wind speeds. And we see that we have this wind event that picks up in the middle of the night for about an hour or two with thresholds at about 9 meters per second. Wind drops down, and then we have gusts picking up at about noon, fluctuating around 13, 14 meters per second, and this sustained event then during which we have a threshold at about 9 meters per second at this first burn site. On this same day, we see a similar pattern where winds pick up at about noon, but they don't reach the same maximum. They're up at gusting at about 11 meters per second. And then there's no saltation detected at this site over this period, and so obviously no threshold that we can calculate at this unburned site. We can also plot these thresholds for the two burn sites on the same day. Here's September 12th. And we see winds picking up at both sites at about noon and gusting throughout the afternoon at about 12, 13 meters per second. And both sites have these sustained wind events throughout the afternoons with thresholds at about 9 meters per second, although it appears that maybe threshold is slightly higher throughout the entire event at that second burn site in yellow compared to the first burn site in red. If we just adjust the y-axis here, we can see that, yeah, it does appear that if we were to fit a line to these threshold wind speeds at the two different sites, maybe threshold is about half a meter per second higher at that second burn site compared to the first burn site. So to summarize the results from this initial work that I've been doing over this past year, it does look like there's substantially more erosion that occurs at these burn sites, especially in the first several months immediately following the burn. And then I measured at that first crystal fire that I worked at, sediment fluxes that appeared to decrease then somewhat steadily throughout the fall following the burn. And then there's little erosion that appears to occur after that spring green-up in the spring and then during the next summer. There also appears to be a fair amount of variability in saltation activity, sediment flux, and possibly even these threshold wind speeds within the burned areas or between burn sites as well. So with that, I'll take any questions that you might have.
Do you have time for a question?
Yes.
Yeah. That's something that we're going to be looking at down the road to try to specifically answer that question in terms of whether it's, you know, the reduction of vegetation cover or some actual change to the physical or chemical surface of the soil that contributes to the erosion. So specifically right now, I can't say.
Your textures for the sites were what?
They're silt loam.
Silt loam?
Yep. Silt loam, yeah.
And then it appeared on the first burn where you had a ground cover came up, the erosion went down, but then in the fall, you had showed some additional, as soils dried out, it looked like there was some additional points that were high in September. You had some dots that were pretty high. Was that because of the annuals?
Sorry, I see what you're saying. Yeah, we have that green up, obviously, and then it's really dry throughout the summer, and I actually have some soil moisture data, but it wets up in the spring, and we have that green up, and then that vegetation dries out and essentially, you know, senesces. And at that point, I don't think it's as functional.
Were the perennial grasses coming back then? Or are they all dead?
Yeah, they're all dead. Yep.
So
later in the summer.